Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood, tips and tricks,
products we love,
and brands that we can't live without. Let's get into it.
How are you?
You've caught me with a mouthful of oatcake. It's my snack. There's nothing better for me than an oatcake with butter, honey, and chopped banana on the top of it. Have you ever had that?
To me, that sounds absolutely rank.
Oh, Georgia!
But, you know, each to their own, each to their own.
Well, it's funny we should be talking about food and our relationship to it. Before we get into the chat, because we are going to be talking about body image today with somebody pretty, pretty special, just tell me in short how you are.
How am I? I'm good, actually. As of right this second, I feel... really, yeah. Like, I'm not happy about the weather, but
no.
Gigi was 2 on Sunday, and it's just, you know, like, it's so weird. Like, around kids' birthdays, I just look. Do you do it? Like, start looking back at photos, and you think, oh my gosh, like, look what's happened in the last 2 years, and then I feel really. Like, really grateful, because look at this podcast. Like, I was even just looking back at that, and I remember we had our first sponsor a couple of days after Gigi was born.
Yeah.
And you and our old producer, Imo, came to my house. Gigi must have only been 4 days old.
Yeah.
And we recorded that in, like, Axel's bedroom or something.
Under some duvets.
Yeah. And I just, now, it's just so different. And obviously now we do 2 a week, and... gosh, like, just all of the amazing conversations that we get to have.
Yeah.
Just feel really grateful.
Are you a bit nostalgic?
I'm a bit nostalgic.
We might get a tear out of you today. Do you reckon?
No, don't go too far. And how are you?
I'm slowly recovering from my intense massage neck injury. but yeah, I've actually started my intense 10 days at work. So I'm on early breakfast at the moment. And that means I have to get up at 1:30 in the morning and then try and function for the rest of the day. I've got to say, I love my job. I love radio. But this shift
is hard.
It's a hard one. So yeah, if I fall asleep at the end of the podcast and just stay where I am, you'll understand why. otherwise, I'm all good. But I'm really excited by this conversation, actually, because I came off the recording and I'm sure you felt the same. It sort of lit us up from the inside out, didn't it? A really educational but super interesting conversation from somebody that we've really admired for a long time, actually.
Yeah, and also around a subject that we are so conscious of, you know, how we raise kids to be body confident and happy and all of those things. It's really difficult, and there is no one size fits all approach, and there's so much that's been instilled in us that we need to, like, unpick. And do you know what? It's just a really difficult thing to get right. And so I think, yeah, the more of these conversations that we have, I mean, slowly we can kind of take away those things that we've learned over the years that are not helpful.
I think it's one of the things, if I'm going to be completely honest, like I always am, it will be the thing that destroys me the most for my children if I get this part wrong, because I know that my mum had to help and guide me through an eating disorder. And if any of my children have an issue with eating or body image confidence, it will break me because I so want them. I have friends in my life who have amazing relationships with food, as I do now. And the way that I look and feel is so much healthier than it was when I was in my 20s. So I just hope and pray that these conversations can educate us to really kind of set the bar. you know, to like use the right language and listen to the signs and, you know, speak about various different subjects in the right way. That's all I want, so that I can save them from that, because it was such a dark period, you know?
Yeah, I think, I mean, as parents, we always want to protect our children from things that we've perhaps been through that haven't been great. And I guess even more so for you, like you've lived that firsthand. And yeah, I guess you feel more pressure. But I haven't lived, you know, an eating disorder, but I definitely have seen people around me live that.
Yes.
And also there's been times in my life where you look back and you think, yeah, that wasn't healthy. That wasn't a great way to be thinking about my body or about food or about exercise. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's one of those things. I really want my children to be healthy on the inside as well.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? I really do. And there's a real fine line between saying it doesn't matter what you eat and what you know, and how much you exercise. But also it does a little bit, because your body, if it is a car, you've got to put petrol in it. You've got to
fuel it with the right things.
You've got to change the oil, and there's certain things that you've got to do to maintain it.
So yeah, I think we should get into it, because it's a fascinating one. Georgia, who are we chatting to today?
Today we are chatting to the incredible Molly Forbes.
Now, there are certain guests that we do get very excited about. Obviously, we love all the guests on the podcast, but today the conversation, I feel, is going to be absolutely wonderful. Today's guest, a campaigner, a writer, presenter, keep going, a co-host of podcast Bodycons. She also founded the Body Happy organisation to promote positive body image for children. She is a mum to two little girls. Today, we are going to be talking to the brilliant Molly Forbes.
Thank you so much for having me. Gosh, that makes me sound like I'm like literally never sleep.
It does, actually. Do you ever sleep?
I do sleep, yeah. I don't do everything at the same time, but I do generally often feel overwhelmed. And hearing that back makes me realise possibly why I'm overwhelmed so often.
Yeah, do you have those moments where you think, I feel like I've bitten off more than I can chew? Or do you love being as busy as you are?
Both. So I love being really busy, but I all the time have moments that I feel like I've bitten off more than I can chew. But I don't see a way round it, really. So we just keep going, don't we? We just keep going.
Holding on.
Yeah.
So you obviously talk a lot about raising body confident children, but how did you kind of get to this place, and what made you want to really campaign for it?
Yeah. So I've got two little girls, and I think I always prided myself on thinking that I was aware of things like diet culture, and, you know, I was like, I'm a feminist. I know, you know, I want my girls to like know that they're more than, you know, how they look, and that they've got so much to offer the world. And I don't ever want them to feel like they're not, you know, perfect as they are, or they need to show up and look a certain way. But rationally, I knew that in my brain, but I don't think I really, really knew it. And I found myself, after my second daughter, like getting involved in some actually potentially quite harmful habits that if I'd have carried on down that road, it could have ended up in a bit of a dangerous place. And I had a kind of a moment that I wrote about in my book. And I feel like I always talk about this moment, but it was really the pivotal thing for me when my eldest daughter, who was 5 at the time, she asked me why I was weighing spinach, and I was doing like a diet, and I didn't even call it a diet. I said it was healthy, quote unquote, healthy eating. I was on a health kick. You know, that's how I framed it in my mind. Cause even rationally then I knew that like diets weren't the one. But it was a diet, like the intention, it was intentional weight loss. And I was trying to change the shape of my body. And I was doing things like, you know, getting up at 6 a.m. to do HIIT workouts, and really restricting what I was eating, and weighing spinach, and doing all this kind of stuff that actually on the surface might seem, well, what's wrong with that? Everyone does that. But actually the reality is that I wasn't doing it from a place of self-care. You know, I had a newborn baby who barely slept. And I thought it was more important to drag my bleeding, leaking body through a HIIT workout that was actually probably like physically causing me pain than to rest, you know? And I think that was all tied up with feelings of, at the time, like a bit of low self-esteem. My life had changed a lot. I'd become a mum to two. We'd moved to a different place. I didn't have any time for myself. And I thought, if I can get my, you know, pre-baby body back in some way, I'll get my pre-baby life back. And it was my eldest daughter actually asking me why I was wearing spinach one night. I was just making family dinner and I wasn't going to eat the same as what I was making for everyone else. And she asked me why. And I think in that moment, I just thought, I don't really know, to be honest. Like, how can I frame this for you in a way that I'm happy for you to, you know, would I be happy for you to be copying what I'm doing? And that sort of led me down a bit of a route to kind of exploring my own relationship with my body. And I started educating myself and reading about this subject and reading about body image. And as I started to feel better, at that point, I started to notice all of the things that were trying to drag me back again and all of the messages that were coming for me. And then in turn, all the messages that were coming for my kids. And at that point, I got quite angry and I thought, I need to do something about this. I need to be part of this kind of conversation, trying to push back at some of this. And that was really what led me to what I'm doing now.
Wow. I mean, I feel like I just want to shush and just listen to Molly talk. That was really powerful. What was your upbringing like, and what was your relationship like between food and your body and your sort of self-worth, I guess, growing up? How was that for you?
So I grew up in a fairly progressive city. I grew up in Bristol. My parents were both secondary school teachers. They were both pretty like liberal, very in tune with, you know, our feelings and our emotions. And like the running joke is that my dad's from Brighton and he's, you know, like he's from like this really kind of like liberal artsy kind of background. And, you know, I think that growing up, I had loads of positive messages at home. I mean, I wasn't allowed a Barbie. I wrote in the book about not being allowed a Barbie because my mum, who was like, you know, this kind of like feminist and teacher, was like, no, it's promoting unrealistic body types. I remember her actually saying that to me. And I was just like, I just really wanted a Barbie.
Just give me a Barbie.
So I think my parents were actually pretty switched on and in tune with this stuff. And also being secondary school teachers, they were aware of the impact of, you know, unrealistic body ideals and, you know, particularly how this impacts girls. And I've got a sister, so like me, they were raising two daughters. But I didn't grow up in a cave on top of a hill wearing a blindfold and earmuffs, you know, like these messages came for me in just the same way that they come for everyone else. And I think what I wasn't necessarily so prepared for was how to sort of filter some of those messages. So I grew up in the 90s and it was, you know, like I'm 36 or 37. Gosh, I don't even know how old I am. I think I'm 37.
Let's
actually.
Go 36. No, joking.
Just an hour number.
That's bad, isn't it? Anyway, I grew up in the 90s and it was really kind of as a teenager. I remember I was 1995 when I started secondary school. So it was, you know, Kate Moss. And then, you know, as getting older, people like Nicole Richie, Paris Hilton, that was very much the kind of like shape. But at the same time, I was really into, I remember being really into indie music and I really had a crush on Damon Albarn from Blur.
Yeah.
And his girlfriend at the time was Justine Frischmann out of Elastica, I remember.
Yeah.
And I remember going to the hairdressers when I was like, I don't know, maybe 12 and getting my hair cut short, and I wanted hair like Justine, but I ended up with a hairstyle that was more like Chesney Hawkes.
Oh my god.
Like
this is brilliant.
and so I had this like short hairstyle, but all the way through year 7 and 8 my nickname at school was Little Man. The boys used to call me, like these group of year 9, 10 boys, they would see me from the other end of the corridor and they would shout down the corridor, oh, it's Little Man, it's Little Man. And I was quite a late developer. So I became really aware of my body around that kind of age, sort of 11, 12,
yeah,
and starting to feel like maybe I wasn't quite right. It wasn't quite, didn't fit how it should fit if I was going to kind of get this social kudos to look a certain way and be one of the popular girls or whatever. And yeah, so although I had positive, mainly positive messages at home, although obviously the messages did slip through sometimes because my parents weren't immune to this stuff either. And extended family members were often on diets and talking about diets and, you know, talking about food in a certain way. So although it was mainly in positive, I think that I did grow up thinking definitely that there was a certain type of body that was the better type of body to have. Certain bodies are good bodies, certain bodies are bad bodies. You know, fat is bad. It's your fault if you gain weight, if you don't have, you know, the perfect body. There are things that you should do. It was all about kind of putting labor in to look a certain way. And what can you get back if you look this way? And this is ultimately the most kind of important thing that as a woman I had to offer the world. And I really, although I sort of fought against it, I do think I genuinely sort of believed it in my soul, even though rationally I could kind of question it. I felt it. It was like in my DNA somehow.
Yeah.
I remember you only had to look at like George, and you're obviously in, you know, you were in this world of kind of marketing and magazines, and, you know, we've all been part of it. But even looking at some of the magazines that are around in the 90s, you know, with that sort of diet culture and who they put on the front covers and Kate Moss coming out with Nothing Tastes as Good as Skinny Feels and all that, like you said, even if your positive messaging was coming from home, it's very hard to understand as a girl of that age or, you know, a young man of that age to be like, hang on a minute, what am I supposed to be taking in here? What are the parts I'm supposed to be filtering out? Because it feels like a barrage of it. You know, the minute you step outside your home, you've got all the other conflicting messaging, and it's really full on. I mean, anybody that gets through that period and doesn't come out untouched, I think is in the minority.
Yeah. And you know what, even just saying, oh, you know, in the 90s Kate Moss was the body icon, and you look back even just over the last like 30 years, you couldn't possibly conform to all of those different shapes. Like that right now, everyone wants to have a big bum and a small waist. Well, if you look back in the 90s, that would have been like a bad body. And I think it's very easy for us, you know, as women in our 30s to think, oh, that's, you know, that's crazy. But how can a teenager who's going through puberty, like at different rates to their friends, even begin to understand that that's crazy? It's so easy for them to get drawn into that. It, like you say, even if they've got their head screwed on, even if they've got people at home saying that's crazy, it's everywhere. It's absolutely everywhere. But how on earth are we going to change it?
I think it's conversations, you know, like conversations like this. And I like to think of it as a bit like a ripple effect, like in a stream, because if I take a step back and look at the bigger picture, I get totally overwhelmed and I think, well, what's the point? We're never going to change anything. But actually, if you look at just how the change in conversations have been just in the last 5 years, you know, we're having different people on covers of magazines. You know, the fact like that Cosmo cover in January was great. You know, we are reframing the way that we talk about health. We're becoming more aware of all the many different things that impact our weight, for example, that are totally beyond our control. And this is really important and it's really good. But unfortunately, there are so many industries that have so much to gain by us and our children not feeling peaceful and friends with our bodies that they're not going to let us go without a fight. So I think it's about being aware of a lot of this stuff, being aware of the messages, and maybe exploring how we might ourselves be inadvertently perpetuating some of these ideas from a place where we think, you know, it's like a place of kindness or positivity. But some of these messages that we are, you know, getting involved with sending our kids are actually, when we really like go into it, they're not that helpful. They're not helpful when it comes to body image, yet particularly the way that we talk about health and food. And I think that just raising awareness and having conversations. So one of the things that I really love about my work is that I get to, I run workshops for teachers and all sorts of different people that work with kids through Body Happy Org. And when we do these workshops or do these talks, or, you know, I hear from someone who's read my book, for example, like it makes me realize the power of these conversations and the power of just showing another perspective, because everything is so nuanced, isn't it? Like nothing is clear cut, nothing is straightforward. But unfortunately, we've got to this place where social media often makes things seem really simple and things seem really clear cut. And so we
if you drink this tea, you will look like this. And we see it, don't exactly. we? It's like that's as clear cut as it gets. It's like, do A, get to B, you'll look like C.
Yeah, exactly. But also even things like the way that we think about health, the way that we think about body size, the way that we think about like what is healthy, what's healthy eating, for example, all of this stuff. We think we know, like, you know, eat lettuce is good for you, eat chocolate is bad for you, you know, being a certain size, you know, a larger weight is automatically bad, thin is automatically good. Like often these kind of like real binary ideas of what health looks like can actually really impact how little kids, even kids as young as three, feel about their body. So I think when it comes to teenagers, my kind of take is that we don't need to just put this off until our kids are teenagers. We need to start giving them the messages right from when they're toddlers, and you know, be thinking about the way that, you know, we're talking about this stuff ourselves and some of the behaviors that we're role modeling in front of our kids and how we're, you know, having these conversations with them. And then also for teenagers, just giving them some tools to question what they're seeing and have conversations and being be kind of critical thinkers and be inquisitive about it. But ultimately, I don't even think it's about, I mean, I love all the work that's going on to kind of raise awareness of filters, for example.
Yes.
Like there's some brilliant work being done around media literacy, saying to teenagers, you know, how can you spot if a celebrity that you love on Instagram is always using filters on their pictures, or, you know, whatever, you know, how can we spot if people are editing their photos? That's really important. It is really good. But ultimately, I think we need to go deeper than that. I think we need to be telling teenage girls particularly, but actually kids of all genders, that even like, actually, the way that you look is the least interesting and important thing about you.
Yeah.
You know? Oh my God, and yes.
Yeah. And let's look at some other ways that we can value people and ourselves that are away from this. You know, even if you know that that person's editing their pictures and, you know, that that person doesn't really look like that in real life, we're still saying to people, oh, well, it doesn't matter because, you know, they don't really look like that. We're still saying the way you look is important.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's about, yes, we need to do that, but we also need to just, like, let's just move away from the way people look and start valuing things, you know, other things.
Zoe and I have had this conversation before, and it's a difficult one to balance, I think. So we talk, you know, we're always like, oh, the baby's beautiful. Oh, you look so beautiful. Oh, you're so handsome. You know, all those things. And it's just natural. It rolls off the tongue. Oh, look at your gorgeous cheeks, you know, when they're little. And so do we just not comment on the way they look? Because we've had conversations around friends who've never been told that they were beautiful. So they grew up thinking that they were ugly. Yeah. So it's like, do we just not comment? Do we comment a bit? Like, what are we supposed to do?
Oh, I mean, I wish I could say that definitely, you know, my way is the right way and this is what you have to do and give you a manual, but it's complicated, isn't it? I don't think that there's necessarily a straightforward answer. The way I can tell you what I do and I can tell you the way I approach it, and this is based on a lot of the research that I've read and a lot of the kind of experts and the academics that I've interviewed. And so I have two kids who are really different in temperament, and my youngest, she's six, and she is obsessed with picking outfits. And, you know, she was always like posing in front of the mirror and dancing. And she's so confident in the way she looks. But that concerns me because I kind of feel like, don't objectify yourself. You know that, like, the way that it's great that you really love the way you look, but also you know that that's not the most important thing about you. And that kind of worries me because actually what we know about body image is that, so the way that researchers measure it, they look at two things. So they look at body satisfaction, which, to kind of put it really, really simply, is liking what you see when you look in the mirror. So kind of being satisfied with your external appearance. And then they'll look at body appreciation, or body functionality is another thing that often gets thrown around. And that is essentially really appreciating what your body can do and really kind of living in the experience of your body. When it comes to body image, we know that with kids particularly, but with adults too, if we can really focus on body appreciation, body functionality, zoning into how our body feels in a moment and really appreciating what it does for us and how it allows us to live our life, that is great for body image. We know that people who, even if they score really high on body satisfaction surveys and they really like the way they look, they don't necessarily have positive body image because they're putting all their worth into that kind of appearance basket. Mm. And actually our appearance does change and it fluctuates, and the ideal body always changes. You know, we touched on it before that that ideal shape always changes. So it might be Kate Moss one decade, it might be Kim Kardashian another, and you can never keep up with that. You know, it's a constant work and constant, you know, thing to kind of have to be thinking about. So actually, if we really focus on body appreciation, so with my kids, I kind of think, you know, if my 6-year-old will often say, do I look nice? And I'll say, you look lovely, but it's not your job to be pretty. You know, it's not your job. What is it not your job to be? And she'll say pretty, you know? So if I'm giving her, that's like when I've been forced, when I feel like I've been backed into a corner.
Yeah.
But if I'm giving her a compliment, I will always say something, you know, like, you know, you're so brave, you're so kind, you're so clever.
Yeah.
I love the way that you've done this. However, that doesn't mean that we can't comment on people's appearances, but trying to comment on the things that they've chosen rather than, you know, because if you think like an outfit, for example, my youngest loves putting together outfits. So rather than saying to her, oh, I love how you look today. You look so cool today. I'll say to her, I really love the way that you've chosen those colors.
Yeah.
You're so creative, you know, like you're so stylish, the way that you can pick these different colors together, that shows how creative you are. So I'm giving her a compliment, and it is kind of an appearance-based compliment, but actually what I'm complimenting is her talent and her creativity. And I'll always back it up with something else that I love about her. So it's not, you know, about the external, you know, and for me, that's kind of, that's how I approach it. There's this idea that I you know, appreciating like being into makeup or being into fashion or being into like jewelry or whatever is somehow at odds with having a positive body image. And I don't think it is, because
I agree with you.
Yeah, it is fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
You know, some people do enjoy it. Some kids do enjoy it. Some kids don't, and they're not bothered, and that's totally cool. But there's no like moral. I'm not interested in any kind of morality around that stuff, or saying that one way is a better way to be, you know?
Everything that you're saying is ringing so, so true with me. And I feel like I come from a mother who, you know, amazing mother, fully supportive, definitely wouldn't have been doing my career if it hadn't been for her kind of like go get 'em attitude. And she was also a TV presenter in Australia and did all her thing, model. But what my mum did, I think, and what I'm really battling against, and I still battle with it now, is she put the majority of our worth was on how we looked as girls, you know. Oh gosh, look at my beautiful daughter. She still does it now on Facebook. My beautiful daughter is, and I'm like, please stop saying that. Please stop saying, like, I'm grateful that you think, well, I'm not grateful actually. It makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable. So what I try and do with Luna now, and with Isla, but obviously, you know, she has her mum to navigate that sort of stuff as well, is to, like you said, is to comment on how brave or clever or smart or funny or creative she is. Or I feel like I have such a job to get it right, because as a result of all of that stuff that I was sort of conditioned with, I've definitely had real problems with my eating and my body image over the last 20 odd years, you know, and it's still a battle. Sometimes I still have to check myself and go, no, this isn't what it is. This is what it is. And just keep remembering that you are so much more than how you look. So I really do, oh God, I've got to get it right. I want to get it right so badly for her. I really do. It makes me feel quite emotional because it's like there's just a really fine line between really fucking it up and getting it. And how do we know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We'll be right back after the short break.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Where were we?
Growing up, my mum and my nan were like huge role models in my life. My nan, neither of them have ever had talks around diets or restricting eating or anything like that. It was just it was just never a discussion. It was just, you know, you just did what you ate what you wanted to eat, and that was it. There was nothing around diets. But when my mum was 44, she had a heart attack, and I was 17 at the time. And suddenly she came home from the hospital after being in hospital for a few weeks or whatever, and with all these diet sheets, what she needed to eat, how much exercise she should be doing, and all of that kind of thing. And it quickly made me realise that food and exercise is for your health. And then I kind of not became obsessed with it, but I was suddenly like, oh my gosh, I've got this burden of this hereditary heart disease, because my nan also had it, and my dad. So, you know, everywhere there's high blood pressure, diabetes, all of these things. And I suddenly thought, right, I don't want that. I don't want that. I want to be super healthy. I want to go to the gym. I want to eat right. I want to do all of these things. But over time, it's so easy for those things to slip like a bit too far. So you kind of become obsessed with it. And even though it came from the right place, it did actually genuinely come from feeling of me being like, I don't want to get heart disease. Like, I want to be healthy.
And it's that's the line, isn't it? That's
the fine line, George. Occasionally, you know, like maybe when I was 20, maybe tipped over the edge a little bit too far, where I'd be like, oh my gosh, no, like anything that had fat in it, I'd be like, I just can see my arteries clogging up if I eat that, you know? And it wasn't about
fear, though, George. Was that fear around the
fact
that your mum, you know, your mum had a heart attack at 44. Was she healthy? Yeah. Was she a healthy person? Were you,
do you know what I mean? I don't know. Like, my nan definitely, like, walked miles and miles every week, had the best life, like so much fun, did yoga 4 days a week. You'd think all of the right things, but I never really looked at diet because we just ate. Do you know what I mean? We just all enjoyed food. We all just, we never ate fast food particularly, but I don't know. There was never any emphasis on it. But I think it really sparked something in me, like just look at demonizing food, you know?
Yes.
Like fats. It was more the fats. I remember just looking at the fats and just seeing a clogged artery. And how do we stop that from happening? Mm. But equally, know that that is something that does happen. And, you know, if you do just eat a load of fat, yeah, it will clog your arteries. Like, it will. Like, it's just...
Oh, it's such a tricky one, isn't it? Because this is kind of the crux. I think we're kind of hitting now the crux of the matter. So
yes,
people want their kids to be healthy and have confidence and be happy. And no one likes the idea of their child feeling like their body is wrong. But we also have a really clear idea of what healthy is. And so people also sort of want their kids to be healthy, and they want to promote, you know, eating veg, for example, and exercising. And I think what we need to do is we need to, there's two different conversations happening here. So the first thing is like, what is health to you? Like, what do you think health is? How do we define health? So that's kind of the first thing. So let's look at how we define health. And then the second thing is kind of really separating health behaviors from the idea that we can kind of control our health, because with all the best will in the world, like, you can go to the gym every day, you can eat kale every day. That is not going to be a guarantee that you're not going to get a disease, or you're not, that you're going to live, you know, until you're 90. Because unfortunately, I mean, some people find this fact liberating and some people find it frightening. Unfortunately, there are so many things that impact our health that we just don't have any control over. So for example, genetics. So if you do have a history of heart disease, for example, in your family, that's kind of, you know, that's a genetic thing. And I'm not saying that there aren't things that you can do in your lifestyle to kind of, you know, look after your body, but there is obviously an element there that's already built in. So if we look at weight, there are over 100 different factors that influence our weight and our body shape. And lots of people don't know this, because lots of people, the kind of common narrative is that the only thing that impacts our weight and our shape is what we eat and how much we move our body. But actually, even if we all ate exactly the same and we all moved our body in exactly the same way, we would all still have different types of bodies, because body diversity is a thing. We're a human species. We're not all meant to look the same. But also, the mind and the body don't exist separately. And the way that we talk about health often kind of thinks about mental health as a separate thing from physical health. But actually, our brain works as part of our body. So we know, for example, that things like trauma, emotional stress, they have a real physical impact on our body. So when it comes to things like weight stigma, you know, anti-fat bias, kids being, how that plays out for kids is kids being bullied in the playground. So we know that like kids who are in higher weight bodies are 63% more likely to be bullied at school. So just that very act of being picked on at school, being treated differently by peers, weight bias can also show up with teachers, you know, not being picked when they put their hand up, or a kid not putting their hand up, or feeling in some way their body's wrong, or being put on a diet by their parents, or being made to feel like they're not good enough. That's traumatic. And that trauma on its own has a physical impact on the body, raises cortisol levels, which is bad for our body. It's bad, you know, physically it's bad for us. So all of these different things like actually impact our health in a way that have nothing to do with the food that we eat and you know, the way that we move our body. So what I'm not saying is that, okay, we can just like sit on the sofa all day and eat donuts all day if we want to be, you know, looking after our body. I'm not saying that. But actually, if we can kind of take the pressure off a little bit and know that it's not all on us to be, this idea of personal responsibility, there are so many things, you know, society, systemic oppression, like, you know, looking at, you know, our income, you know, our access to engaging with these behaviors for so many people, it's much harder, you know. Organic kale from Waitrose is expensive, you know. If you're getting most of your food from a food bank, or you're living in a really low income family, you don't have access to these things. So I think also that the kind of, to take another step back, is that we know that people who have positive body image, so kids particularly who have positive body image, and when I'm talking about positive body image, do you remember how just before I talked about body appreciation? So appreciating what their body can do, and feeling at home and enjoying the experience of how their body feels. Yeah. We know that kids who have that are more likely to treat their body in a way that's kind of looking after their body. So if you define health as movement and food, so it might be that they're more likely to engage in movement. It might be that they're more likely to eat a wider range of foods. But health isn't just about what we eat. Our health behaviors aren't just about food and about how much we move our body. They're also about how much sleep we're getting. What are our boundaries around social media? How much time are we spending outdoors? How are we connecting with our friends? Because all of these things have a huge impact on our health as well, but they're often left out of the conversation because they're harder to kind of package up in a pretty little box and sell back to us. So I think it's sort of about being really compassionate with ourselves as parents and recognizing that a lot of the way that we think about health nowadays is coming from an industry that is trying to sell something to us. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, go back to the 90s, diet culture. It's kind of obvious, yeah? Like the front pages of magazines, you know.
Cabbage diet.
Exactly, yeah. Cabbage diet or Atkins diet or whatever it was.
News your stones by Christmas. That was always my favourite. I used to be like,
it's so obvious, isn't it? Or like influencers selling, you know, teas laced with laxatives or, I don't know, appetite suppressant lollipops. All of this kind of stuff is really obvious diet culture. But actually what diet culture does is it morphs and it changes. And it's often so normalized and sneaky that we're kind of swimming in it without realizing that it's all around us. So what diet culture has kind of now done is it's morphed into the way that we talk about health, and it's morphed into kind of public health policies saying, you know, putting calories on menus, for example, you know. And actually this is all part of this idea that's upholding that some bodies are good bodies and some bodies are bad bodies, and you're better, more worthwhile, more worthy, more successful, more responsible citizen if you look a certain way, because it's telling us that health looks a certain way. But it doesn't.
It would be really amazing if we had, because we all want, like you said, Molly, we all want our children and ourselves to be healthy. Mm. And that doesn't, for me, come, like you said, packaged in a pretty little box and looks a certain way. That, for me, is an understanding around exercising for fun, for the endorphins, to feel good, not about looking good, because I think, you know, I did that for too long. And Georgia, I think you probably in that box as well. We're like, oh, I've got to exercise because I've got to look a certain way. Now I say to the kids, you know, why do we exercise? And they go, for fun, because it feels good. And like, we're already chanting that. And Kit's three and he get, you know, hopefully that's the right message. But really, health, like for me, and I don't know, I'll ask you this question, it doesn't matter what you look like remotely, but if you feel good and you know, we all have cheat days where we'll consume, you know, the things that maybe aren't right for us, but you know, whatever, I have my cheat days and that's fine, I'm okay with that. But being healthy, we have to be able to want to look after ourselves, and that and whatever that looks like to you, it's very hard when you've been conditioned and brought up a certain way, and maybe the education isn't there around certain foods and certain exercises and stuff, and then you're supposed to break that. It's very difficult, Molly, would you agree, to like understand how to do that from an early age?
Definitely. And it is, and that's why, that's one of the reasons that I wrote my book, because I want to reframe the way that we're talking about health with kids. You know, little kids in school, a really common exercise that's happening in school when they're talking about food is they'll be given like a plate, a picture of a plate, and they have to sort the healthy food into one pile on the plate.
My son's literally just done this. Yeah. He's literally just done this exercise because he was telling me about it.
It's a really common one. And it's really damaging, unfortunately. And actually, if nutritionists, if the educators got their information from nutritionists and kind of food education experts, they wouldn't be doing these kind of activities in school. These are made up by adults who think that they know all about, you know, healthy eating and food, but they don't necessarily have like the qualifications in that specific area. So actually, when we're talking about food, there's a lot of evidence to show that being totally taking a neutral approach with food is actually much more beneficial to raising kids who have a healthy relationship with food. So that isn't necessarily, that's not telling kids that all food has the same nutritional value, because it doesn't. Yeah. You know, a donut has different nutritional value to, you know, a lettuce. But it's just kind of taking the morality away from food, not calling some food good food and some food bad food. Food is food. And all food has a place, all food's fit. All food has a place in our diet somewhere, because food isn't just about fueling our body. It's also about connection with our family, happy memories, celebrating our community, celebrating our culture and our identity, learning new skills, cooking, you know, exploring, being creative. Like, food is about all of these things. And when we teach really little kids that some food is good food and some food is bad food, they can essentially learn that they are this idea that they can control everything about their health just by what they eat, which we kind of know isn't the case. But also they can become really fixated. So they can either develop a fear of certain foods, or they can want the foods. The irony of this is that sometimes they can want the foods that we don't want them to have. It just gives that food even more power. You know, it makes it kind of locking it in a cupboard. Exactly. Yeah. It makes it even more exciting. And so when they do, the few occasions they get access to that type of food, you know, sweets or chocolate, they can't handle themselves around it. And they will tend to kind of binge in that kind of binge restrict mentality that anyone who's ever done a diet and not allowed themselves carbs and then kind of fallen, quote unquote, fallen off the wagon. Like, we've all experienced that kind of like desperation of, like, you know, eating that kind of food because we don't know when we're going to be allowed it again. Kids are the same. So actually taking a really neutral approach to food and bodies and exercise, and moving the focus away from kind of morality, and with exercise, moving the focus away from it being as something that we should do, even something that we should do to because it's fun. Like, often with my kids, like, we don't even call it exercise, or we don't even, if we're going to go out for a walk or go out for a bike ride or, I don't know, have a kitchen disco, it won't be like, right, we're going to do some exercise now. It'll just be like, we're going to do something fun. You know, we're going to go out for a walk. I often won't even say that we're doing this because, you know, we need to keep our bodies fit and healthy. It will be like, right, we're going to have a family adventure. We're going to go and explore. We're going to have some family bonding time. You know, we're going to have some time outside, see some new things, away, you know, rather than like, oh, we're doing this because we have to move our body. You know?
But isn't it important that? I kind of agree and kind of disagree, because I've been brought up with exercise and I know how much enjoyment I've got from, you know, competing in sports and rounders. And that was because I loved the sport and I loved the exercise. And I also loved, you know, the competition element. And it was a big part of my upbringing. But then I guess I had quite an unhealthy relationship with exercise in my 20s. So you could say, well, was that as a result of X, Y, and Z? I guess we don't know. But I don't know if I agree with not giving exercise a label, because why shouldn't exercise, if it's done in the right way, be something that we promote?
I don't think it's necessarily about kind of one or the other. I don't think it's, because I love movement. I love exercise. Mm. I love going to the gym. But the irony for me is that I really discovered a real love of it once I opted out of diet culture, and I tuned into how it made me feel. Mm. I think that all kids are different. So we can't kind of say that one rule is necessarily, one approach is going to work for everyone. Yeah. But what we know is that when we talk about exercise in a certain way, about it kind of being something, what can happen with some kids is that if we talk about having to do something, like it becomes something that we have to do, it can become as like something that, oh, you have to tidy your room, you have to brush your teeth, we have to do exercise. If we can promote, you know, how is this going to make us feel?
Yes.
What are the benefits of this? And when I'm talking about benefits, the benefits aren't that we are automatically going to, you know, get big muscles, because actually there's also research to show that if we focus on the intrinsic motivators of exercise, so how it makes us feel, you know, it's really good for our brain health, it's really good for our bone health, it's really good for self-esteem. Sports, you know, some kids are really sporty, and my little one is really sporty, and it can be a great way to bond with other kids. It can be a great way to learn new skills, increase stamina and strength. Those are all intrinsic motivators. But what is happening now, the way that often that we talk about exercise, it becomes muddied up with this idea of like having to look a certain way. So it's the idea that healthy looks a certain way. And so what that can happen, it can mean it puts some kids off. Ironically, it can put some kids off movement and exercise, and they're more likely to skip sports and PE. It can show some kids that movement isn't for everyone. So if they're not sporty naturally, or if they have a body that doesn't fit that kind of athletic ideal, they can think, oh, well, that's not for me. I'm just going to sit out of PE, you know? Yeah. So we know that kids who feel bad about their body are more likely to skip sports and PE. So actually, if we want to make it inclusive and we want all kids to get involved, we need to show them a wider representation that athletes come in all different shapes and sizes, but also let's give them access to loads of different types of movement, because some kids will really love football and netball, and some kids just don't like that stuff, you know, and that's okay. There's other forms of movement.
Totally.
There's something for all of us.
I totally agree with that.
On the point of, you know, not labeling exercise, I was just thinking about like in our house, I always focus on, oh, mummy's going to do her exercise because I just want to feel good. Like I say that, I just want to feel good. And obviously that is, I've got to, because I want to feel good, right? But then am I doing that thing of I have to do it, because I do have to do it. Like, I actually do. And there are some things in life that you have to do.
Why
right?
do you have to do go it? To, what do you mean you
have to go to sleep? Well, I have to, because otherwise I'll feel rubbish.
Well,
I have
that's
to
different.
Go to sleep. Yeah, I have to go to sleep because otherwise I'll feel rubbish. So
yeah.
I don't know. And then say, for instance, my husband, he plays sport for his job. So sometimes when Axel, especially at the moment, he'll say, well, why is daddy doing that? And I'm like, because he has to stay fit. But then I'm saying he has to do that but he does. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I guess if it's your job, I mean, that's a whole other thing. Yeah. It's a bit of a one, isn't it? I guess the thing that I'm really into is intuitive movement and intuitive eating, because for me that comes from a place of really connecting with how your body feels and being really kind of in tune with your body. So this is something that I constantly have to work on. For example, I know that if I get up early every day, I have a better day, because I like it. I'm a morning person. Yeah. Used to work on breakfast radio, and like my body clock is tuned to be up early. So I know if I get up early, I have a better day. I know if I go for a swim first thing in the morning, I have a better day because it makes me feel good. I don't always feel like doing it in that moment when I wake up, but I know it makes me feel good. But one thing I've had to really watch with myself is that there are some days when I can't do that, because I need to sleep in a bit longer because I've had a really late night. Or sometimes, I mean, like for recently, like I have my period and I just don't feel like it, you know, and I'm really tired, and actually my body needs to rest, because rest is really important as well. And that is hard for me, because even though I'm not moving my body in a way that, like, trying to keep my body, you know, in shape, quote unquote, you know, to do it for an aesthetic goal, it's still little bit in my head like, oh, it's something that I have to do. So when I don't do it, I can sometimes feel like a bit guilty, or like, oh, I've let myself down, I failed at self-care, I'm not doing it right, you know, and kind of
I feel like
I'll beat myself up a bit.
Yeah, I do.
And actually with intuitive movement, it's about being a bit more compassionate and taking a step back and recognizing that even if I don't go for a swim that day or go to the gym or go for a walk or a bike ride, whatever it is that I've set myself to do, like in the whole scheme of things, what do we want? We want long-term, consistent, joyful relationship with movement and exercise. As soon as it becomes something that I feel I have to force myself to do because I have to do it, I'm skating on dangerously thin ice, going back to those days where I had to get up at 6 a.m. to do a HIIT workout in my, you know, postpartum, tired, exhausted body. Actually, what my body needed in those days was more rest. And I didn't need to be doing HIIT workouts. I needed to be going for a walk outside on my own without a baby, like for half an hour, because was what my headspace needed. That was what my health, that would have been healthy for me at the time. So I guess I really like this kind of concept of intuitive movement or joyful movement. Like, often the way that we frame it with kids is kind of joyful movement, because it's joyful and it feels positive.
Or I want to go for a run. I want to.
So I love
maybe
running.
It's that. Maybe it's saying that instead of I need to exercise because it makes me feel good. Maybe it's I'm going for a run because I really want to.
Yeah.
I'm going to do this exercise because I really want to.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
even if your brain's not saying that, just in front of your children.
Just being really matter of fact about it. And the same with food. Like, I'm going to eat this. I'm eating a salad today because actually I'm choosing to eat a salad because that's what I fancy. But, you know, later on I might choose to eat a chocolate bar. And that's it's just being totally neutral, taking the morality and and sort of that kind of sense of that having to do something, taking that away from it, and ultimately tuning in to living in the experience of what your body feels like. You know, what does your body tell you in this moment that it wants? What does it need? What is going to make you feel good? You know, and then recognizing that we do this stuff because it makes us feel good, not because it makes us look a certain way, because actually that isn't healthy, you know? No.
And that is the big lesson. And I guess on a sort of parting note, Molly, what is the one thing that we should take from this conversation and impart on our kids around this subject?
I think one of the most powerful things that we can do when it comes to body image is, I mean, I could like trot off a load of phrases like all bodies are good bodies, and, you know, teaching kids that their body is their own, you know, and they're the masters of their body. And that's all like really important to do, and I believe that stuff. But I think that really, like, if we're going to get really deep and kind of actually think about our own behaviors around this stuff as well, is take a really holistic view of health. You know, take a holistic view and realize that health behaviors aren't just about what we eat and how much we move our body, but let's look at stress and sleep and rest and social connection, and recognize that our mental health and our physical health aren't separate. And I think that if we start doing this more as a society, like as well as in our own homes, but also at school and, you know, in wider society, what we're going to end up with is kids who actually are empowered to properly look after their health in a positive way that's not going to be damaging to their body image, or, you know, the way, you know, leading them down a path of disordered eating. But I think that also we're going to end up raising kids who are actually more kind and accepting of other people whose bodies don't look or function like their own.
Yep.
And that's what I want. I don't just want to raise kids who are healthy and happy and have high self-esteem. I want to raise kids who are good people, who treat other people the way that you know, I would be proud for them to treat people, you know, with self-esteem and kindness and compassion, regardless of what they look like. Doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, Molly!
That was so wonderful. Cuddle. Thank you.
What an amazing conversation.
My mind is like just bubbling.
Aren't we lucky, George, to do these chats? Because every time we have these conversations, I just learn so much. Thank you, Molly.
I was literally thinking that throughout the whole chat. We're so lucky to be doing this and taking, you know, we call it work. It's not work. It's kind of educating ourselves for a couple of hours every week and making us think about things that we maybe wouldn't have. Thank you so much. Thank you both. Thank you for having me.
Will you do a Q&A with us?
Yeah, of course.
So we can
ask them questions.
Brilliant. All right. Molly, lots of love. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.
Literally scribbling notes as we were going through that podcast about, like, yes, say this, maybe say it like this, don't say it like that. I mean, wow, what a woman.
That was one of those chats where I could have literally just sat back, not said a word, and just listened and just kind of absorbed it all, because there were things in there that we said, you know, you said, I don't necessarily agree with, like labelling exercise, for instance. Yeah, I do it, but... And I was kind of trying to show how would I not label it? Because if I just randomly roll out a workout mat in the room, get some weights.
What do I say I'm doing?
What do I say I'm doing if it's not, I'm exercising because, you know what? I'm exercising because it makes me feel good. Yeah, and I do say that. And Axel will be like, yeah, mummy exercises because it makes her feel good. But I am still labelling exercise. Same with James. He doesn't always feel like going for a 5K run at like 7 o'clock in the morning, or, you know, spending hours doing like weird stretches. But he has to because it's his job. Yes. And that's the way his body needs to function. Yeah. So I think there is that thing of functionality and like teaching kids, I guess, how to get the best function from their body.
That was what she was saying in a way, wasn't it, about, which I really liked. It wasn't about you know, how the body looks. It was about what the body can do, and I'm always fascinated and how it functions, exactly. And I think that's a really important message. That's a message that I, you know, you look at, you only have to look at kind of people that, you know, gymnasts or, you know, athletes, or, and it's just like the way that you can get your body, I guess, to perform and to be the best it can be without having any hang-ups around it, you know?
Yeah. And also, like, as in function, not to play sport or function to do anything, but to function to feel good, because yeah, totally. Ultimately that's what we all want, isn't it? We yeah. all want to feel good. And I know for myself that if I don't exercise, I feel foggy. I know that about myself.
Yeah.
And I know that if I don't know, have a few days of, you know, when you move house, those kinds of those times where you just have to eat takeaways, like you have to, there is no option, like you've just got to dig in. I feel a bit yucky.
Also, because you just moved bloody house, I've got that coming up in 10
you
days
have.
Time.
I know. More that's what I
on
said
that
it.
On the next podcast. But also, I don't know. I agreed with, I say 90% of what she was saying. I didn't necessarily agree with that all foods are on the table, because I look at some of the kind of fast foods and I look at some of the, you know, ready meals and the salt that's in those foods and stuff, and I think there should be a little bit more education around that.
Yeah.
But the rest of it, Molly Forbes for me. Absolute star.
Oh gosh, amazing. And you know what, I was thinking about that, the salt thing and the ready meal thing, and I guess the whole intuitive eating.
Yes.
When you really get in tune with how foods make you feel, you wouldn't pick those things anyway, I guess.
Yeah, like, totally
you wouldn't
true.
You wouldn't pick a ready meal because it, yeah, eventually you wouldn't feel that great eating it.
Yeah.
And
right.
it wouldn't, yeah. Yeah, I guess maybe that's what it was. I was thinking about that point. And yeah, like you can't, I mean, Gigi, if I let her, would just raid the flipping pick a mix jar at 6 a.m. in the morning. And she'd
I would
sit
too,
there and
to
it.
Be fair.
So
but nice.
Hopefully, after doing that for a few days, she might think, oh yeah, I feel a bit sick.
No more pick a mix, please. Yeah. Now, listen, as always, we would absolutely love you to rate, review, subscribe, and follow the podcast. And please, if you do have time, to give us a little rating, a little 5-star rating would be lovely, but whatever you feel, that would be so great as well, because that helps us kind of spread the Made by Mama's podcast word.
Yeah, absolutely. And do tag us in your photos. We love to see you listening, where you're listening, on your walks, on holiday, some lucky people. And if you do have any suggestions or feedback on any of the chats, then our DMs are always open. Just drop us a message at Made by Mamas or on Zoe's channel at Zoe Hardman. And we will be back on Friday.
See you then.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.